So my name is Jeff Dorfman, and I've studied immune responses to malaria as a postdoc at the Kemri Wellcome Trust Unit in Kilifi, Kenya, studying B-cell memory to malaria. So what immune mechanisms are in place to fight a malaria infection? The immune system throws just about everything at P. falciparum, mostly at the blood stage of the parasite. T-cell responses matter for protection. Antibody responses matter. Natural killer cell responses probably matter. Some of the responses may not always be beneficial, especially when the immune system hasn't previously experienced malaria and has trouble controlling it. Infiltration of and activation of monocytes on a large scale in tissues can be deleterious. Too much or poorly controlled levels of TNF-alpha, particularly in tissues, also can be very bad for the host. How does the malaria parasite evade the immune response? I'm actually probably going to spend most of my time talking about this because there's so many answers. There are many mechanisms. I mean, just to get a little bit of a picture of this, it may be helpful to think of the fact that the parasite's a eukaryote and has about 5,000 genes per genome, compared to anywhere from 5 to a few hundred genes for viruses. So it actually can devote very large portions of its genome to evading immune responses. For one, the parasite changes its code in a sense as it develops and is antigenically distinct in different developmental stages. The sporozoid stage is injected when a malaria-infected mosquito takes its blood meal. That's how a person gets newly infected. Each blood meal is associated with the injection of an estimate around 1 up to about 20 sporozoids. They can reach the liver within about 10 minutes, although they can probably last a good bit longer than that on the way if necessary. The sporozoid stage could be an important target for vaccines because stopping this stage would prevent disease, and there are not that many sporozoids that need to be stopped for each exposure. But the parasite, once it invades a liver cell, never again uses many of its antigens that are found on the sporozoid. It can use other genes in its large genome for that. A virus, on the other hand, can devote only one or a few genes to its coat, so every time it comes out and reinvades, it's probably antigenically quite similar, unlike malaria. In the next stage, the parasite infects and grows in liver cells. Each exposure results in a very limited number of liver cells being infected, one for each sporozoite that makes it to the liver. So the antigenic dose is tiny, and the immune system, quite frankly, really doesn't always find these cells. And for that reason, natural immune responses to liver antigens, mostly by CD8 expressing T cells, are almost always very low and often hard to detect at all. Each infected liver cell at the end of its incubation period releases somewhere around 10 to 20,000 merozoites, or blood stage parasites, which then grow and cause disease. These merozoites live, eat, and grow in red blood cells, and this is a fantastic way to evade a large portion of the immune response that might have been helpful. First, parasites inside the red blood cell are not targeted by antibodies because antibodies can't enter the cell. And second, and possibly equally importantly, red blood cells don't express MHC class 1, meaning that CD8 expressing T cells just can't target parasites that are inside the red blood cell. Another host response is the removal of infected cells by the spleen. I don't know of any evidence that this is properly an immune response, but rather it seems to be part of the homeostasis of the body that normally removes old red blood cells that just don't work as well and get rigid. The average lifetime of red cells is somewhere around 90 days, and then they're filtered out and destroyed by the spleen. Malaria-infected cells seem to appear similar to old red blood cells towards the end of the two-day infection cycle. Well, it's 2 days for falciparum, and then they're efficiently removed. To combat this, Plasmodium falciparum parasites, as they reach this stage, force adhesive proteins to the surface of the red cell that allow the infected red cell to bind to epithelial surfaces, and this prevents them from circulating and prevents them from being removed by the spleen. In fact, if you look at a blood slide of a malaria-infected person, you'll find only immature stages. Everybody else either adheres because of these adhesive proteins or gets filtered out by the spleen. Unlike the parasite when it's inside the red cell, these adhesive proteins are targeted by antibodies. but each parasite has an arsenal of about 60 genes per genome and uses them one at a time. By the time the body makes an immune response to one adhesive protein, some parasites have switched to another one. Also, the antigenic variability with even from one set of 60 in one parasite to another set of 60 in another is quite substantial. So it means that in a malaria parasite population, there's many, many more than 60 antigenically different adhesive proteins that could be used, could be chosen from. And the ones that express an adhesive protein that's poorly targeted by the immune system of that host, those are the parasites that tend to thrive. So why is a vaccine so hard, other than what I've already described? One point that I just want to make here is that Plasmodium falciparum, which makes it distinct from another malaria parasite of humans, Plasmodium vivax, but Plasmodium falciparum in particular, to our knowledge, has no dormant state. In essence, the blood stage of malaria has evolved to live in the face of immune responses of partially immune hosts for months or even years. In malarious areas with long dry seasons, falciparum as a population survives only by living asymptomatically in partially immune people. That's the only way it can survive through long dry seasons. And why partially immune people? Because those people actually don't have enough immunity. If there's not enough immunity, the body will mount a huge immune response and will kill the parasite or die, or in these days, hopefully seek medical treatment with antimalarial drugs. So as you can see, it may be very hard to generate a protective immune response to the blood stage because just many of the responses actually are pretty easily evaded because every parasite that couldn't evade these immune responses that we're capable of making is, quite frankly, no longer around. Sporozoites are hard to target because there's really only one chance to target them before they enter the liver, and this can happen within 10 to 20 minutes. So if a random sporozoite just happens not to encounter an anti-sporozoid antibody that inactivates it, it might make it to the liver. There's no opportunity for boosting or for any positive effect of boosting. And by contrast, antiviral immune responses don't have to catch every virus, because eventually the virus that's missed will eventually have to appear in the next cycle and can be targeted again. Malaria, when it appears again after the sporozoid stage, will no longer have many of the sporozoid antigens that you might have wanted to target it. Liver stage parasites are hard to target because there's so few, because the antigen is so low as to be actually very poorly immunogenic. A vaccine will need to create a long-lived immune response that is strong enough and efficient enough to destroy all of those few liver stage parasites in a human liver, which in an adult weighs over a kilogram. There could be from one exposure, one or five or 20 of these in an entire liver that might be several hundred grams or a kilogram or more. And this also means that there's no natural or very little opportunity for natural boosting of vaccine immune responses to make them longer lived. And that's it in the case of this vaccine, and that applies to the sporozoites as well. So in these, they'll have to maintain themselves with minimal boosting. And that may explain why protection from immunity, especially test vaccine-induced immunity, to the extent you get any at all, tends to be relatively short-lived in practice. Even natural immunity wanes without exposure, although it probably doesn't normally wane completely.